Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on today's program is Adrian Gostick, co-author with Chester Elton of the book The Orange Revolution. Right now, there's a tremendous emphasis on teams, how to maximize the contribution to teams and the contribution from teams. Adrian, welcome to Edgewise.
Well, thank you, Dave, for having me.
Now, your first book was called The Carrot Principle. Why don't you tell us about that?
We had a lot of success with our book, The Carrot Principle. It came out with a big research study behind it, 200,000 people. It taught us the role of a manager could play in engaging employees. The manager sets clear goals, communicates, builds trust, but accelerates all of that with recognition. Mm-hmm. We coined the term carrots. Better to lead with a carrot than it is to beat with a stick.
Of course.
As we met with senior leadership teams, they would tell us, we have some real good pockets of excellence within our organization. We have a great R&D department, a great marketing team, a great customer service support team. If only we could take that excellence and spread it throughout the organization. That became the charge. How do you create this engaging team? Not just a manager here and there who's good, but take those little pockets of brilliance and spread them company-wide.
Right. Now, I'm just curious, where did the term Orange Revolution come from to begin with?
The term has been used in the Ukraine, in the Netherlands, in China. Throughout history, there have been orange revolutions, and it's usually people wanting to change their lot in life. Well, what's happening here in business is you have these little teams, these little microcosms within an organization that are changing their lot, and they're taking responsibility for the outcome of their little unit within a bigger organization. During the writing of The Carrot Principle, we found in the best teams that it wasn't just managers who made a difference, but employees were recognizing each other. There was a lot of esprit de corps. In this new book, The Orange Revolution, we have a 350,000-person research study. What we looked at was, what were the characteristics of these great teams? And one of the things we found is there was a much higher preponderance for rooting for each other, appreciation, patting each other on the back. Those great teams didn't only have carrots being used by managers. They were orange.
Adrian, certainly in this post-recession era, companies need these orange teams in order to implement change. Too many ideas just sit there on the shelf.
That's exactly right, Dave. A lot of companies have strategies. And when most customers are choosing between company A and company B, there's not a lot of difference in strategy. It's the execution that makes the difference. And execution comes through employees who are engaged.
Right.
And that's what we started looking at. What were those characteristics that made an engaged employee and an engaged team member? How do you create a team full of people who care about the business, give that discretionary effort, and take that strategy through to execution because they believe in the goals and visions of the organization?
Yep.
And because they really care about owning issues and about their role in the success of the organization.
Okay, now, how do you go about pulling together people who fit in orange teams?
One of the big problems is we have a tendency to look for competence. We found in these best teams that certainly they wanted personally competent people. But as we've seen with athletic dream teams that go to the Olympics and fall on their faces, simply being good at what you do doesn't drive great results. It's also harmony. It's also working together. The great organizations that we studied also looked for things like their character, their ability to work together. Were they able to tell stories of times where they were open with issues, where they made mistakes and they were able to share about that? Are they open and honest? Also, are they able to tell stories about how others on their team lifted them into the limelight, or do they just tell stories about themselves? You're looking for those characteristics that point out this person has high integrity, high empathy, versus they just have a great resume.
Now, in the book, you also talk about the need for the team to have their noble cause.
One of the stories we told is about George Washington on the bank of the Delaware on December 31st, 1776. His army's going home because all their enlistments were up on the next day, January 1st. He offers them money to stay, and not a single man stepped forward.
Mm-hmm.
He then gave his great speech about the glorious cause and how when they're old men in their rocking chairs, that other men would look at them with envy, that they'd fought off the British on the battlefields of New England. Every single man stepped forward that day to reenlist.
And what exactly does that suggest?
Well, great leaders aren't built during good times.
Right.
Great leaders have to emerge in tough times and give employees glorious causes and gather their input in creating these common causes and noble goals. One of the other stories we tell in the book is about Medical City Dallas Hospital. They wanted to increase their patient satisfaction scores, but they realized if they went to employees with that, employees would say, Yeah, yeah, that's nice. Great, okay.
Right.
But what they said was, we want to create raving fans of our patients and their families.
Mm-hmm.
That got people's minds engaged. And they started coming up with creative ways, down to the cafeteria renaming itself City Gourmet and offering steaks and gourmet chocolate thunder cake and all these crazy things because they wanted to make raving fans who, if they had to go to the hospital, would choose Medical City Dallas Hospital.
You also talk about cultivating a team.
There are three characteristics of great teams. The first is great teams wow. They have a commitment to world-class results. They want to, with every interaction with a customer or with each other, create great outcomes. The second is that great teams have a commitment to no surprises, which basically means open communication. I'm going to let you know if there's a mistake. I don't want to be called, hey, wasn't that product supposed to be in London? Why is it in Peoria? Surprises in business are never good.
Well, that's true.
Great teams had this commitment to not surprising each other, to being open, having good debate. They weren't necessarily always nice to each other. They would argue things out, but they had a very strong commitment to be honest with each other. And the third was that great teams cheered for each other. In short, wow, no surprises, and cheer were common characteristics of these great teams. That's how leaders cultivated these teams. That's how team members could make themselves great as well.
Adrian, it seems to me that teams aren't necessarily a group of people from different functions that sit in a room to accomplish something. Teams can also be a group of individuals within the same department.
Both are very applicable. First, the team that comes together for a short amount of time, cross-functional, they're gathered from all parts of the company, that has to solve a problem. We're a utility, we've got natural gas leaks in this area. How do we address this issue?
Mm-hmm.
They'll disband after a few months. Still vitally important that they create a great result for your organization, but it's certainly not going to stay together.
Right.
The most common team that we're all part of is our department, our group, whatever you want to call it, that in many cases doesn't act like a team.
Yeah.
People don't feel like they're part of a team. We don't give them those team-building tools that help people get along with those people they're going to be together with for a long time.
Well, of course, a major factor here is the supervisor or manager who's going to be selecting the individuals who can work together.
Exactly. On these great teams, managers play a vital role in bringing the right people together, encouraging, in setting vision, removing obstacles. What we found in those great teams we studied was the leader was part of the team, and he saw himself in that way. I have a role on the team. It's a really important role, but it's a role. I'm not the autocratic dictator of this team that gives every instruction and manages everything. People want to be included. They don't want to be just managed.
Absolutely. Now, I have a question for you. You've worked with Zappos.com.
Yeah.
And Tony Hsieh would have been the leader of the team. What role did he see for himself?
We had a lot of fun working with the Zappos folks during the writing of the book. We went out to their facility several times, and Tony gave us a lot of great insights. In most organizations, the team is small.
Right.
Most CEOs believe that their organization is a big team, but it's not. It's family first, then country. If you're in the military, it's your Charlie company, then you're part of the Marine Corps. We feel first and foremost affiliation to our small little team, and then to the bigger organization. Zappos is one of those rare exceptions where the team is everybody.
So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Okay. Now, what Tony did was very interesting. When he first started Zappos and they started growing, he realized they had to get their values in order or things would not be able to be scalable with the cool, fun way of running Zappos. So he wrote down 37 potential values that the organization might embrace. And he sent them to every employee. Crazy things like, we are a little weird, came out as values that they all love.
That's a terrific one.
They came up with 10 ways that they run their business. And then he said, okay, what is our one noble cause? From 37, it came down to one thing, to live and deliver wow. When we were visiting Zappos, there was a woman who told us this great story. She was one of the first customer service reps. So it was a few years ago. And a woman called in and she was returning some shoes. And then this customer service rep said, was there a problem with the shoes? Absolutely no problem to return them. But can I do anything about this? And she said, well, I ordered them for my husband. He was killed in a car crash. He was never able to wear the shoes. And after they got off the phone, she went to her supervisor and said, why don't we send some flowers to this woman? She's obviously grieving and it would really be a wow. And that's one of our core values. And so they did. They sent flowers to this woman who called them the next day and said, I can't believe that you would have done this, that you would have cared that much about one of your customers. Now, as it so happens, this woman was one of the top 100 bloggers in the world. They didn't know it, but she shared this with everybody she could. And it spread around the internet that this is a company with a heart. It was one person empowered to wow, to create this great experience, who has changed this organization for the better. They now have a department at Zappos that's in charge of sending out cards and flowers and doing cool things for their customers.
All right. Now, what are some of the common ingredients of world-class success in a team?
Great teams measure their results. They also take calculated risks. One of my favorites, though, was this idea of storytelling.
So can you give us an example of that?
Yeah. Zappos.com. Every employee who joins, from the chief financial officer down to somebody who's working in the maintenance department, goes through a month of training. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's 4 weeks of storytelling. Let us tell you about the Zappos culture.
Right.
One of the great stories we heard, too, was from the Wynn Resorts and Casinos. It's a storytelling culture, and that's how they communicate this idea of wowing and being world-class.
And what happened there?
When Steve Wynn was starting up his empire, he went around to different hotels. He stayed at the Four Seasons in Paris with his family.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter had a croissant for breakfast. She only ate half, and she left the other half for later in the day. And off they went into Paris, and they came back. And when they got back to the room, it was gone.
Mm.
She was disappointed. But there's a little light blinking on the telephone, and Steve Wynn picked up the phone, and it was the front desk saying, "We found a half-eaten croissant in the room. We figured you'd want a full pastry when you returned. So the kitchen has one ready for you."
That's wonderful.
Now, Wynn explains to his employees, the housekeeping team had to let the front desk team know that there was this pastry. Mm-hmm. They had to alert the kitchen to hold one. They had to alert the room service department. Look what's happening here with cross-cultivation of teams.
Yeah.
There was at least four groups that are interacting here. And as they tell this story to new employees, they ask them, tell us about times you've done something like that in your organization.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What they're looking for is people who are creative and problem solving, and they get those people through effective storytelling.
Adrian, why don't you talk to us about what orange communication is?
There wasn't always perfect harmony in these great teams, but they were driven to achieving goals and even debating in their team meetings with an idea toward furthering the organization, serving their customers, but it was built on respect.
Got it.
We met with one of the fighter pilots of the Blue Angels, the Navy's elite team, and he walked us through the process of how they talk before, during, and then they have these debriefs afterwards. The flight crew's there, the team physician, all the pilots are there.
Right.
There's no rank. There's nobody in charge of the meeting. And everybody can complain about this, that, and the other. You can own up to your mistakes or somebody will own up for you. And when you walk out, you're all friends. But it's that kind of brutal honesty that leads to some great results.
Yeah, exactly.
Surprises in business are never good. Surprise is usually a problem.
Right.
We missed a deadline. We didn't let the customer know this, that, or the other. And great environments, they eliminate those.
Exactly. And then there's a section of your book entitled 101 Ways to Bring Your Team Together.
Right.
So can you talk about that?
In creating a great team, there are problems. One of the most common we heard was, look, I've just been appointed leader of this team, and my team doesn't respect me. They're not listening to me. Maybe they were up for the job. I was promoted from within. There's a litany of reasons why I'm not getting the respect I feel I deserve. So how do I lead this team when they're not buying in? Or let's say it's a multidisciplinary team, and they've all got 100 different things they're doing, and it's 1 hour a week. How do I get them to really care about my project?
All right. So how do you address that problem?
Great leaders realize they have to hold their people accountable, but in some positive ways. So for instance, one leader told me, I just wasn't getting the buy-in to the team. So the next time I had to report to senior leadership, I took a couple of those people. And I said, Alicia, would you mind reporting on the database system? And all of a sudden, there was accountability. There was ownership.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't trying to be mean to them. I was just showing them that we all have accountability on this. This is our team. We're all accountable for results, which I thought was a great way of sharing the onus of success with the team.
Absolutely.
One of the other issues we've heard is I didn't have a say in my team cause. It got dropped on me from management, and it's way too big for us, or it's just not something we're as passionate about. The problem is you don't go to management telling them that's really not something we were interested in doing, is not an option.
So what can they do?
One of the ways that we've seen is romanticizing the goal. If your goal has been given to you of 10% growth, then how do you get there in a way that gets people more engaged? One of the stories we focused on in the book was of Nash Finch.
Mm-hmm.
They have a team that serves commissaries for military families around the world. They were given a goal of increasing sales and market share and all the things that a senior leadership group would do. And they said, look, if we just tell our people we got to grow or we're all out of a job, they're not going to get engaged. So what do we do? What they decided was their noble cause would be to treat their military families like heroes. And how do you treat a hero? Well, you give them whatever they want, no matter where they are in the world. You make sure they have all the comforts of home.
Interesting.
coming back to the Medical City story, their goal from corporate was 3.7 out of 4 for patient satisfaction. Not exactly very engaging or romantic. But what they said was, we want to create raving fans of our patients and their families.
Right.
They found a way to take that corporate goal and turn it into something that they really believed in and could get passionate about.
Uh-huh.
That's what great teams do. They find a way to bite off a chunk of it to make it palatable and interesting,
right.
Something they could really get behind.
All right. A lot of companies are experiencing risk aversion. The recession has taken money away. So you know that implementing whatever the team agrees to is going to be impossible. How do you deal with that problem?
The companies we studied are some of the most conservative organizations. Age-old companies such as Pepsi, even tough ones like Madison Square Garden, we featured in the book because we didn't want to just pick fun companies built from the ground up to be doing cool things for their culture. Mm-hmm. Like Zappos. Madison Square Garden, you're dealing with union workers in the toughest city in the world. But with all these cultures, no matter where you are in the world, this is about creating results.
Right.
We have a 350,000-person research study showing this is how great teams operate, and those great teams create profitable returns. And the more those great teams you have, the better your organization is. You're not taking that big a risk if you are working within these parameters. This is a less risky proposition than stripping teams out and creating flat organizations, whatever you're going to try to do.
Yeah.
These great teams that we studied took risks, but they were very calculated risks with the no surprises idea. For instance, we featured a great Pepsi beverages company, and we told a story of an engineer that redesigned the way we drink bottled beverages. He found a way to take 40% of the plastic out of a bottle. This technology is going to spread around the world. It's saving Pepsi millions, but they decided not to patent it.
Well, why is that?
They wanted to share this technology because it's the right thing to do for the environment.
Right.
Now, it was a huge risk for Pepsi to take. So when the engineer came up with this idea, he went to his boss, and the boss went through every imaginable scenario, and they said, okay, well, it's probably worth the risk, but let me tell corporate. So great teams do take risks, but they do their homework, they do the analytics, and they make sure that there are no surprises. They're not doing it without others knowing about it.
Right. And just to wrap this up, is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Dave, I think the point is we can all get better at this. We can all get better at working together, providing clarity of our goals, enhancing our communication.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing for me, too, is we've also had moms and dads read it. We've had people who run community groups read it. It really is a good way to run your life, too.
Yeah.
It's great when in our personal relationships, we try to wow each other. We have no surprises. We cheer for each other. These really are foundational rules that we can apply in our personal lives as well. It's not just for business.
We've been speaking to Adrian Gostick, co-author with Chester Elton of the book, The Orange Revolution. Adrian, thanks for being with us on Edgewise.
Thank you very much, Dave.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.